unfortunately, it is the end of an era for many longtime Detroit radio listeners.
End of a long time standing show in broadcast history here in Detroit.
You're fired.
Been on the air for more than 22 years.
You're fired.
The last 22 years have been nothing but pure fun.
You're fired.
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 I'm back.
So, do we say this?
Good grief.
Well, yeah, baby.
Welcome back.
I know.
It's a tough life being a Cub fan.
Welcome back.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Hey. Welcome back.
Oh, would you look at that.
Drew? Guys, where's Drew? Drew?
My God. Podcast number two with me, Drew. Mike Clark will be back tomorrow for his second and final podcast of the week. He'll have met his commitment at that point. I can tell this is going to be quite a subject for the listeners. Are going to have a great time discussing Mr. Clark's schedule as this moves along. I've got my staff with me, though. Jay Timko, Don Levine. Kind of helped me move things along. I've asked the guys, just don't do so much that people start giving you crap. Or start saying, these assholes? Which I know they will. It's just nature. It's just human nature. I know radio. Got to come on real slow. Maybe by the 200th podcast, you guys can put a sentence together and not get pounded on. But yesterday was a smoking success.
Come and pound.
Huh?
Come on and pound.
Are you asking for it already?
Shut up.
Yesterday was a smoking success. We were reading emails and looking at Clark's Facebook page. Incredible how geeked people are to have the Drew and Mike show back. And I have to say, Mike, you know, he hadn't done a show in 3 years. Well, he did do some shows, but he and I haven't done a show in 3 years. And I thought he was sharp as hell. I was blown away. I mean, he did homework. He had notes. He was kind of OCC?
OCD,
yeah. He was his OCD self. He had all his notes. He was crumbling things up. As he talked about it, he crumbled up, threw it away. He was sharp, though. He was on his game. And I was listening to the podcast. I was laughing myself. Usually the second time around, it's just not that funny. I mean, you know, it is he and I. We laugh at each other, but listening back to it afterwards, usually it's just kind of, you know, it's good or it's not good, and it was damn good. It was really good. So that was huge. And Charlie LaDuff is going to do a podcast for us on Friday. Charlie and I will. So we'll get four in this week, and then next week we'll, I don't know, I guess we'll be at some kind of a schedule. Mike Clark has vacation in June.
Sorry, take a time off.
Yes.
Slacker.
This was scheduled some time ago, but it does seem ironic, doesn't it, that Mike has a thing. Anyway, I'm bummed. I mean, I just thought it was so exciting to have the show back together yesterday that I was really, I'm just going to be happy about that and we'll worry about the vacation thing later. So many questions. Oh, my God. And we'll get to those. We had about 200 emails, and they're still coming in, and I do want to address some things. So people have some great questions, and a lot of you have the same questions, and so it'll be great to answer them today. Without Mike, so tomorrow Mike and I can plunge into material. But first, let's talk about somebody who didn't have such a great day today. Our governor in Michigan had a bit of a rough day in Flint. In fact, I'm surprised he even spoke.
Please welcome Governor Rick Snyder.
What do you say? What the hell do you say?
Let me begin by saying, I understand why you're angry and frustrated. I want to come here today to apologize. to say, I'm sorry and I will fix this.
Do it.
Today is an opportunity.
The audience making sure the governor knows they blame him for the water crisis. Fox 2's Erica Erickson with an up-close and personal.
Of course, Obama got his ass kissed for hours. I mean, they loved him. He could do no wrong. And, you know, I'm not sure who deserves all the blame. I don't think Snyder deserves all the blame. Some, no doubt, maybe a nice chunk. You notice that nobody in Flint is getting any blame, though. Have you heard anybody in Flint really falling on the sword? Not yet. Oh, boy, you guys won't say a word now. They're so frightened of...
You mean the people that drank the water?
Yeah, the people that drank... Well, not the people that drank the water. The people that set up decided to go off of Detroit water and go on to Flint water, the Flint River, without bothering to figure out if that was going to work out. You know, would the pipes become corroded?
Well, the guy that
had the proper filtration system.
Well, the guy that was supposed to put the chemicals in the river decided to save a few $1 million, not put them in there. He's in jail.
Well, is he in jail?
Yes.
He was
sentenced.
Yeah. Somebody took a plea today in that Flint deal and is going to testify against the other two, I guess. And I'm sure there's more coming. But anyway, not a great day for the Gov. Trump.
Is he going to survive?
Who, Snyder? I don't think so. You mean like another term?
The rest of the term.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I suppose they could have a recall. No, I don't think so. I mean, Flint could. No, because the rest of the state's not going to want to throw him out, I don't think. Anyway, Donald Trump is the Republican nominee, which is going to be so hilarious. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy this because, I mean, somebody has to be the Republican nominee. He's not maybe the best candidate, but you know what? I don't think he's the worst candidate. And I'm not going to say that I'm a Trump lover. I do like Donald Trump. I didn't want him to be my president, but I'm going to have a hell of a lot of fun watching this election. And, you know, this is the thing that bothers me about Trump is all this talk about how, oh, my God, look at what he's done to the process. It's a new low. No, it's not a new low. It's been, I mean, how scummy can politics be? Politics can get no scummier. He's done nothing to make it any worse. Now, granted, he's an asshole.
Well, he's at the bottom of the food chain.
Bottom of the food chain.
Politicians are, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And but I don't think, is there anything Trump has done that's worse than, I mean, we had a president stuffing cigars in a 19-year-old intern. I mean, really.
That's tough to Trump.
JFK. Now, that wasn't campaign stuff, but we've had horrible campaign stuff. Look at some of the commercials that have run over the years. I mean, just the bullshit that people do to one another in political campaigns. He's
on par.
I wish this is the one thing about Trump that's driving me a little crazy, because I really was, it was nothing but laughs for the longest time. And then, unfortunately, in the last few weeks, whenever somebody takes just a little jab at him, you know, he has to just wail on him 900 times harder.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wish he could just let some of it go. And now, I guess Cruz's father was involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, yeah.
I'm dying to know, is that Rafael Cruz in that picture? Have you guys seen the picture?
I saw it, yeah.
Do you think it's him?
No idea.
Anybody? No? I mean, it's hard to tell. I saw there's one graphic where they show his face now versus his face in the picture. And, you know, he's so much older. It's been 52 years. Could you really tell? But it just kills me that Trump reports this like,
anybody else confirm or deny it?
No, I think it's been denied. I mean, I think Cruz just was appalled and said, you know, how dare he? It's a tabloid report. It's from the National Enquirer. Trump was defending the National Enquirer on the Today Show this morning, going, hey, the National Enquirer, come on, look at all the great reporting they did in the OJ thing. And, the Enquirer does deserve to be defended. They've done some fabulous reporting. God, OJ would have been found guilty if the Enquirer could have only had the Bruno Mali sooner. The shoes, the murdering shoes?
Absolutely.
From the Buffalo News, but they printed them. Yeah, that's the graphic where, yeah, you've got the face going back and forth. You don't have it on your screen, Don. Yeah. Sorry about that, but you can see it over here. It just looks ridiculous. You've got this fuzzy face, 52 years younger, and then this really sharp piece of photography. All of a sudden, this face pops in, and you can't really tell anything by it.
Photoshop.
But anyway, Trump versus Hillary, this is going to be just bloody.
Oh, bloody.
Oh, my God. She, one thing's for sure, if she ever does become the president, she will be just black and blue all over. She will be so brutalized by this campaign. And I don't know. It's weird. I've heard a lot of people say, I can't vote because I hate her and he's crazy. I don't think he's crazy. I really don't.
He's passionate.
He's passionate. This idea that he's an entertainer or he's a reality TV person. No, he's a lot more than that. I mean, they really love to put him down because he hasn't been a politician for the last 30 or 40 years. But personally, I think it's so refreshing to have someone who has not received a government check their entire life.
Reagan-ish.
Well, Reagan did other things. I mean, this guy's been in business hiring people, hiring thousands of people.
Reagan was a...
He was an actor.
Well, right. But he had political experience prior.
Yeah, he did. But he had a paycheck from making movies. I don't know. I mean, Donald Trump, though, in terms of knowing what the real world is all about, I mean, in terms of business, you can't knock it. I mean, they love to talk about his bankruptcies, but holy crap, come on. And he did inherit something from his father, but it wasn't what people are trying to say it was. Anyway, Trump and Hillary.
But what about, you know, you had all, everybody was scratching her head when Jesse Ventura, you know, was a Minnesota governor and then Schwarzenegger out in California.
Yeah.
So it's just like unheard of all these entertainers, but now it's almost not the norm. But
can't anyone really be a governor or a president? Can't anyone do it? I mean, really, is the Republic going to fall apart because the wrong person's president? I think we know that's not true.
Well, they hand off so much of their cabinet, you know, anyway, so.
Well, the people around them are certainly important. Right. I don't know. I'm just beginning to think it almost doesn't matter who is anything when it comes to politics. I mean, stuff doesn't get done. Nothing gets done for years at a time. I mean,
can't get worse.
No, it can't get worse.
Look at the president now. He's on ESPN making picks for the tournament.
Picking the women's sixth March Madness. Now, is there ever time more wasted by a chief executive of anything than that?
How many times has he been on late night talk?
Oh, plenty of times. But that's not unusual anymore.
I want to know if Trump's going to use Air Force One or the Trump airline.
That's a great question.
Because I'll guarantee you his is way more decked out than Air Force One. Well, all that gold and...
Well, and it says Trump on it.
Yeah.
Is Trump going to be in a plane that doesn't have his name on it? I don't think so.
It won't say USA. It'll say Trump.
Yeah, there you go. USA going down from the U and Trump. Yeah, good idea. Just pass that along to him. He'll probably send you a few bucks. How about these cocksuckers, the DPS?
Oh, God.
2 days of no class.
One.
I mean, how stupid. Well, of course they were going to get paid. As if they weren't going to get paid.
Right.
I mean, really? Did you really ever fear that they were going to stop paying them June 30th? No. So they just got 2 days off, basically, or 2 days that they have to make up. And the House is talking about spending $500 million. There's only a $515 million deficit in the Detroit public schools. This is such bullshit. I've lived in multiple states, and I got to tell you, I've never seen a school system as fucked up as Detroit. I think it's just shut it down. And, you know, something will take it. Something will fill the space, whether it's charter schools or
Absolutely.
Kids will take their asses and go to Southfield or Farmington or Birmingham or wherever they'll go, and the state will send the $7,000 or whatever they send with each kid that goes somewhere else. But something will fill the space. DPS is a complete failure. You've got kids that don't graduate, kids that are shoved along who don't have the, you know, they don't have the wherewithal to be moving up a grade, and they send them on anyway. I mean, it's a disaster.
Buildings are falling apart.
Corruption.
Yeah, you know, all the corruption, just nonstop corruption.
How about these principals who were taking all this money, the 12? I love the one chick, the fat chick, who took 309, or was it 394? I got it in front of me somewhere. DPS official admits that she cheated special ed students. Oh, thank you very much. That's not the one, actually. I think this one took $394,000. And she said that she gave a lot of it back to the students.
Yeah, right.
Well, then why did you take it? Why didn't you just let it flow through from the contractor to buy the supplies so the students just get them? Why be an intermediary, steal the money, and then give it back to the students? What was the point of that? We don't need any more middlemen.
Fancy embezzling.
Or middle fat chicks. What an idiot. And, of course, she got a new roof, and she got, you know, all kinds of gift cards. And oh, my God. I've never seen so much corruption in a school. Is there? In fact, I'm not really used to seeing a lot of corruption in schools. It's not a common place for corruption. Here it is. Because in Detroit, anything where there's a pile of money, there's corruption. It doesn't matter what it is, how noble the pursuit is, there's corruption. If there's a pile of money, there's corruption.
Water department, garbage, it all needs to be privatized. It's all
It could do no worse. And that reminds me, the water shutoffs are back.
God damn it.
About 500 more the first day. And how easy can they make it for people to pay their water bill? I mean, you can take $1,000 per person if you prove that you're within 150% of the poverty line, which means they take the poverty line and they add on top of it. You're 150% of the poverty line.
No.
So that's, you know, you can be making not a lot of money, but, you know, enough money certainly to pay a water bill. I assume that if you have water connected to whatever it is where you live, that you can afford it. Why would anyone get water if they couldn't afford it? I mean, assume you buy a house, you have water. I mean, that's what we're talking about mostly, residences, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
how can you own a house and not be able to afford the water? Isn't that preposterous to start with? To me, this is one more.
Well, if you buy a car, you need tires and gas and, you know, like.
Right. But you don't buy, you don't get water. I mean, have you ever gotten water and you didn't have a house and you couldn't pay for it? No, you get water because you got a house. I mean, you get a water bill because you have a house. And if you have a house, you obviously applied for it. You got a mortgage.
Absolutely. Part of the package.
Yeah. Right. So I don't understand the idea that someone can't afford the water. I mean, some circumstances change. People's life, maybe you lose a job. Or I mean, there are scenarios. But this many scenarios? I mean, there are tons of people who are now signing up for and they're negotiating these, you know, this new charity that's associated with the Detroit Water Department. And they will pick up to $1,000 a year of your water bill. Now, that's most of the water bill for a lot of people.
Well, in the businesses, too. I mean, there was businesses there that owed hundreds of thousands. You know, they had owed so much money. How can a business not?
I was just going to say, how long did
I
it
mean,
fest?
Residents are one thing, like you said, but then a list of businesses that you think.
Well, I don't know why. Responsible. Why aren't they collecting from the businesses? Because that's all anybody bitches about. Well, you're letting Joe Louis Arena go 5 years without paying for water. Why are you coming down on my ass? And I have to say, you know, I kind of agree. I don't know why anybody wouldn't pay their water bill or shouldn't pay their water bill. But, you know,
what would happen here really if you didn't pay your water bill?
Well, my water would be cut off.
When?
As soon as, well, they give you a couple weeks.
Really?
In West Bloomfield, we had a $900 water bill, which people have heard about many, 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 many times. And we were like, $900 for 3 months of water? Are you kidding me? They said, well, you must have a leak. Had a plumber come out. No, there's no leak. So they said, well, there's a protest form where you can question your water bill. And the eccentric called me because this was, I was talking about it on the air and they heard about it. So they called me up and they said, oh, by the way, this protest program you're talking about, no one's ever won. Don't expect to, you know, get any break in your water bill. And sure enough, we were rejected. We paid the $900. There was a notice on our door. Pay your water bill by, and it was like 2 days away, or your water will be cut off. So what are you going to do? You're going to not have water?
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's screwed up. In fact, the way they do water in a lot of the suburbs, this is really, I think, one of the most fucked up things. The water is attached to the house. So, you know, if you're a landlord, which I am, I'm not actually, Tess is really the landlord, but we're partners in this property management thing. When someone doesn't pay their water bill, it never goes against their credit.
Because your taxes.
Yeah, it's the home, it's the address that's stuck with the water bill. So we can't put a new person in the house until the last water bill is paid.
Right.
And I got to tell you, there's a few people who just said, oh, well, last water bill, whatever. And they move along. And, you know, even though it was in their name, and you say, well, they didn't pay their water bill. Well, somebody better pay it or you're not going to have any water for the new resident. That's really, I mean, that is bullshit. Why should the person who owns the home was the renter, if it's in their name? Anyway,
I rented a house in the 90s in Canton, and they would send it to the house, the bill. It was 10 years they hadn't paid it. And we got water.
They hadn't paid the water bill in 10 years?
The owners. Whoever owned the home. Because
you were able to rent the house and pay a water bill and have water?
It wasn't part of the lease. We didn't pay it. Plus, it was $10,000, $20,000.
They didn't turn the water off?
They never turned it off.
Well,
and twice a year, we would get this little postcard and would have $10,000 to $20,000. We got water.
That's interesting.
It's probably case by case, city by city.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't really go along with the theory here.
Well, then I heard that they just put it up.
Municipalities are different. I mean, I don't know. What can you say about that?
Well, why do these people just feel like water's free? You know,
it's a human right.
You know, they're
talking about it's a human right.
They've got.
Didn't you hear the actors who came in here and were at the protest? Water is a human right. Damn it.
Why don't they just give them buckets?
Mark Ruffalo. That's it. Mark Ruffalo. He's been in some big movies. Been nominated for an Oscar. He said it's a human right. Mark Ruffalo, by the way, lives in a city. We on 105.1, when Mark and I were over there, we called Mark Ruffalo's hometown, where his residence is. Guess what they do when you don't pay your water bill? They turn your water off. Just like,
well, bummer.
Just like they do in Detroit when he was protesting. But has he ever protested the town he lives in? No. Don't ask me why, but anyway.
Why did it take Detroit 20 years to get to that point? Why didn't they turn it off 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Because Detroit, you know, these are great questions, and actually this is kind of the larger point I wanted to get to about this whole water thing. I think this water, you know, a lot of people are probably really sick of hearing about
water.
Detroit and water and cutting people off and not cutting people off and, you know, these insane, these Herculean efforts to keep people in their homes with water by providing charitable assistance, which I think is honestly a little ridiculous. Look at that pile of protesters. People with megaphones screaming and their mouths are just wide open. It's like, water's a human right. There it is. Stop the shutoffs. Water is a human right. And turn on the water. Tax Wall Street. Oh, yeah, there's the answer right there. Tax Wall Street.
I volunteer. Turn on the water. Drew, I volunteer not to pay my water bill and see how long it takes before they turn it off.
Be my guest.
Just for fun.
But you don't live in Detroit. If you live in Detroit, I'd say there's no telling how long you could go. But anyway, the greater point I wanted to make was with this water bill, Detroit and charity, and I think it's really stupid. I think, you know, they should always help people, whether it's, you know, heat in the winter, water, whenever. I mean, you don't want people on that water. Sure, there should be efforts to help people who have unusual circumstances, but a lot of these people are homeowners who have jobs who just, you know, they're not used to paying the water bill because you don't have to pay the water bill. For the longest time, they would let you go and go and go and go. And when they don't make you pay a bill in Detroit, I think frequently people just say, hey, that's optional. So I guess water is a human right after all. I'm not going to pay it.
That guy's clothing there looks pretty sharp. He probably could afford a T-shirt and he could have paid his water bill. I don't know.
Well, they pay their electric bill. They pay their gas. What's the difference?
We were looking at the line for people who are in line to work something out on the last day. That guy right there, that is a pretty sharp shirt. You make a great point, Jay. Anyway,
a good 3 to 6 months worth of water, that shirt.
A lot of people in line had iPhones in their hand and were playing with their iPhones. If you have an iPhone, I would say that you probably should be paying your water bill. But this is Detroit, and I think this is a problem. This is a big problem with Detroit, and this is something Mike Duggan, to his credit, he's been very much on the side of pay the damn water bill.
Diligent.
Take care of it. We're cutting people. If you can't pay the water bill, you can't have water. It's not a human right. Fuck you. He said that.
Well, and you remember, too, you'd mentioned this before, Drew, that you can hire protesters. So you wonder how many people in pictures like this are.
Yeah, you can bust in piles of protesters.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, how many people do you know have time to take days off at a time and go down and you know, get on bullhorns and chant stupid things for hours and days?
That's why they can't pay. They don't have a job.
I guess they had to quit their job in order to, you know, hit the streets. But. You know, this takes place in so many ways in Detroit. It's like a lot
parking
of these
tickets,
deals.
Same thing.
Parking tickets, those go on for a long time. Believe me, they don't boot cars the first time you've got 5 overdue parking tickets. I'm thinking more along the lines of, we've got this big new casino we're putting up in Detroit. So half the jobs will be Detroiters and half the jobs will be whoever the fuck you want to hire. When you say half the jobs have to be Detroiters, you know, this is Big Brother. Hey, we'll get you a job. We'll help you pay your water. I mean, honestly, look at projects, contractor type deals in other cities, and you won't see the frequency. You won't see anything near the frequency where they're forcing people to hire people from the municipality that the event's occurring. And it's like, hey, we're delighted to have this project. We're delighted to have this casino. You hire whoever the hell you want to hire. But in Detroit, it's different. It's always got to do something for, you know, got to get people some jobs, Got to make it easy, even though they're not qualified, even though a lot of these people maybe aren't as educated as they should be. Let's lay some jobs on them. And I think people in Detroit expect this.
And it's, absolutely. And it's troubling, too, because you can see, not with all of them, there's some that are great workers and they'll take the job. But the ones that are, you can see an attitude. Like, I know I can get a job just because I live in the city, so therefore they don't put their best effort in, you know, like a server at a restaurant downtown or something like that. They know they got the job by virtue of, so.
Oh, like at the casino when you need a drink?
Exactly.
You've been sitting there playing blackjack for 2 fucking hours. And, you know, you
and
see
you're paying for
by,
drinks and they're not and, free.
Right. Well, why would they not have 80 waitresses? Because you are paying for drinks. I mean, you'd think they'd be dying to lay drinks. I mean, not to mention in Vegas, they love getting you drunk. So you play worse. You lose more money. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's a no-brainer.
A casino where you can't get a drink? I've never heard of it.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't exist
no.
anywhere. No. Trust me. You can get at any casino in the world, you can have a drink like that. Except Detroit casinos. And I've talked to pit boss after pit boss about it, and they all say the same thing. We just have trouble getting people. We have trouble keeping people. There's a lot of turnover. It's like, what is the problem? Come on. All right. It is podcast number 2. Drew and Mike podcast.com is the site. You know that. You're already here. And we're working on other ways for you to hear this thing if you struggle to get in. A lot of people really spent a lot of time trying to get into this damn site, and my apologies for that.
Jay, get your shit together.
Yeah, it's all me.
Yeah, we're gonna connect you to some other places where you can hear the podcast. It will be much, much easier. The growing pains of doing this are very difficult and very frustrating. And, you know, we have a lot of email today, people asking for a lot of things like, oh, God, believe me, I want to do all these things. And we'll read some of it, too. Because there were a lot of the same things coming up, but I know if I answer one person, I'll answer 50 people.
What do you want to go through?
Yeah, let's go through some.
Want to go through some of the text stuff or the email? What do you want to hit first?
Let's do the emails to the podcast.
Okay,
that we were reading originally.
Yeah,
and of course some are just stupid, but you know, I don't care how wonderful a crowd you have, and we have a great crowd.
Are there any you suck?
No, there's no you sucks. No, not at all. This is the beauty of going away for 3 years. People love us, man. They just love us. They couldn't wait to hear us together again, Mike and myself. And again, I apologize for Mike not being here today. Mike's agreed to 2 podcasts a week. That's it. And, you know, I would say some well-anointed humor, some nudges here and there, and maybe we can bump Mike up to 3 a week.
I was going to put the over-under, 2.5. I'll take the over.
You think so?
I do.
You think he'll go one more?
I do. After July. After June.
Oh, after his vacation.
It's
not just
a month-long vacation.
I forgot. Yeah, it's not a week vacation. It's a month vacation.
Yes.
So we have to figure out how to do this for a month without Mike Clark.
Plus, aren't you taking July off?
No, I'm not taking July off.
Of course not.
No, isn't it 5 weeks? Isn't Clark's 5 weeks?
He's entitled, right?
It's not a month. It's 5 weeks, isn't it?
Well, there's 30 days in June, so.
Well, 35 days is 5 weeks.
Yes.
I think it's a 5-week vacation.
4 weeks anyway. And 2 days.
Jens, I've been listening to shows since I was 16. I've truly missed hearing your banter, so congrats for being back. Since joining the military, I've listened to a show in about 3 different cities over the last 10 years. And now I'm pumped to be able to listen to it in podcast form and not have to worry about the time zone difference in Hawaii or any place in the world I might be. Just want to let you know how well this podcast is going to work. I'm glad you're so. I'm glad you believe it. It's probably the fastest growing medium for radio style communication. No, this is not. You know, there are other people like Mike and myself who have had shows who are now going this direction because a lot of reasons. The main one being probably terrestrial doesn't want us anymore. Truly, I think Mike and I could have probably worked out a terrestrial thing. I'm not sure it was. Well, we know it was not the right thing for us at the time, and we talked about this in the first podcast with our parents. Mike's father's alive. He's in his 90s. My parents are having a tough time in their 90s. It just it's the right thing for us right now. Keeping it going would be great. I hope we can. It's just going to depend on a lot of things, and we'll talk about them. I have to say, I'm so happy to hear you guys together again. Honestly, if I had a penis, I'd be so rocked. Missed you. Glad you're back. Ash, fucking awesome! And from Ash's iPhone. My husband and I listen every day. Wait, is this from? Oh, Barb. Okay, I thought this was Bob and Bob. My husband and I listen every day since the beginning. My life changed when you were booted off the air. Mornings have been confusing and disoriented. We didn't know how to get ready for work anymore. No other radio stations have been able to fill the gap. We tried the sitting here listening to the podcast and want to drop you lines you asked for. We will be listening to them as soon as they're available. And your old ones to fill the gap in the meantime. Great to hear you guys are back at it. Longtime fan. Can't wait to hear what you have in store. No FCC and radio restraints. Sweet. And here's Dan from Commerce Township. Heard the first podcast. It was so awesome. It's like you've been gone so long and you're back home and together again. For me, it's even better on a podcast. I can listen at my convenience and rewind if I miss anything. I hope to hear from you guys for years to come. Mike, try to come in more days. Thanks, Dan. Thank God you guys are fucking back. Well, thank you guys for putting this podcast together. I've listened to you from the WRF to the podcast to 105.1. Your humor has helped many more than you probably know.
Drew, you couldn't read these. I'm sorry to interrupt. You couldn't read these if you were on.
No, you're right. I'd have to completely ignore them.
It would be purely edited.
There's nothing like it out there. Fuck all the haters and keep this thing going. I'll be a daily listener. I hope you guys include your prank calls so we can hear your humor at its best. Welcome back, Dave. Yeah, we actually have a phone line. You know, I've got to get the gumption to work on that phone line. Practice, I guess. Yeah. All these things take work. And it's almost a miracle that we've just got three microphones working at this point. But we're getting there. Hey, guys, glad to have you back. I'm down here in Florida, so it's nice to hear some familiar voices. A lot of out-of-state people. Yeah. A lot. Amazing. I want to reach out to let you know I love the first podcast. I'll be listening as long as you guys keep recording them. Future idea. With all the advances in technology, you think Mike can broadcast from inside his salad? Just an idea. Looking forward to more, Zach Carter. What are you looking for, Jay?
Remember that one about the mushroom under the desk? That's one.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. I'm so happy you guys are back. You can't believe how miserable life has been without you two. The shit that's on the radio is so preposterous and not funny. I feel like my life will get some balance back. I love the both of you with all my heart. Thank you for my soul. Boy, this is heavy. But you decided to do this for all of us, undying fans. Thank you. Thank you. I wish you the best. We'll do anything to support you forever. Jan. Thank you, Jan. Thank you. And, you know, I have to say, Mike Clark and I have not even discussed money, which is, I was going to make a smart-ass remark there. I'll pass. but obviously, when you do something like this, there are a lot of costs involved. And it was my idea. I wanted to do it. Mike was very much on the fence at first. I thought he was going to come through. And I think he even admitted that he sort of knew he would too, but he just couldn't. It was sort of like the terrestrial thing. I just couldn't commit myself to it because I just thought, God, as soon as I take a job, I'll be back in that rat race. And it just didn't seem like the right thing, the 6 to 10 a.m. thing. And a lot of it too is just not so much having bosses, because I liked working for the people I worked for. They were great people, especially the biggest boss of them all, the guy that ran it was Peter Smythe. Was a wonderful, I mean, just, I can't say enough cool things about him. I just love this guy. But, you know, you do have responsibility. You do have to answer to people. You do have, when complaints come in, it's not like, this is the nice thing about the podcast, you can really ignore complaints like never before. I mean, if we upset a lot of people, I would apologize. I don't want to do that. But, you know, it's a big difference between this and commercial radio. When someone makes a ridiculous complaint, if they're the right person, it can actually matter. Mm-hmm. Here it doesn't, you know, we're all the same here.
But if the city wants Drew and Mike, this is the only way. Because who's going to allow Mike 30 days off?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah, that's right. And I'm going to need some chunks of time, too. I hope not soon, but yeah, at some point. So glad to hear you guys together. Going to laugh the whole show. Great stuff. Well, you'll probably have to check in. You have to check the underside of the table where Clark was sitting. You might have to wipe off some mushroom prints from the rod Clark got when talking about sexy prints.
He did have wood. I saw it.
I'll be listening every day. And we'll put my money where my mouth is if you decide to monetize the podcast. Love you, Drew and Mike. Jason Abram. Thank you, Jason. And yeah, he was really, what was that whole rap about how sexy Prince is?
Yeah, he really got hot, didn't he? He's really
enamored. And, you know, I was always blown away by Prince. I love his guitar playing. I love his songs. I love his talent. I mean, he was such a force. And I mean, Prince and Bowie in the same year almost seems like too much to me, too much talent to lose. But When I did see some of the clips of him after his death, though, I did have to roll my eyes and go, oh, God, some of the outfits, though. Like that yellow one-piece he was wearing. I forgot where it was. But and then that – I talked about it on the podcast yesterday. It was like a two-piece. It was like a two-piece, not a bathing suit. It was pants, but there were buttons down the side. And it was like a bra. It was like a giant bra that just went below his breasts. And it had white buttons on. It was just so femmy.
But he got away with it.
I know he did. He did. But that was when Clark was talking about how sexy he was. I did have to remind him that there were some really dubious outfits. Yeah. But I just loved the guy. I thought he was great. And today there was another story about Prince that, well, this girl in Germany called 911 in Carver County, where Prince lives, to say that.
Ratted him out.
A year ago, they were up doing blow all night. Apparently, she was on a year-long bender because she just finished the bender. It took her a year. She called 911. Yeah, I was with Prince when my bender started a year ago, and he said he couldn't control his cocaine intake.
And a year later,
they did some cursory investigation and said, well, he's not in any danger at the moment. And then the other thing that was so sad today was that this world-renowned addiction specialist, apparently his son, who works for him, literally had flown to Minneapolis, was on his way to Paisley Park, and he was among the group that found Prince in the elevator. He had actually contracted to talk to these guys about some kind of, it's like, it's called something without walls, quitting without walls, or I got the impression it was some sort of outpatient thing, maybe.
Did Prince, or one of his representatives?
Yeah, Prince or one of his people. I got the impression, though, he was with it.
He was with
the program.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That is awful.
Literally, they were a day
24
late.
24 hours.
And, you know, that was so... That whole thing was so strange. You know, the one thing we couldn't get over yesterday in the podcast was he has this OD. He's unresponsive. They land this plane in Moline, Illinois, which tells you how serious it was. He's given Narcan, this incredible turnaround that completely reverses the effect of an overdose.
Oh.
And he's back on his feet, and he throws a dance party that night. What the hell? A dance party. I know. And I still think it was something effective. God, how am I going to get past this? How do I keep people from finding out how fucked up I was? I'll have a dance party. No one will ever believe I'd have a dance party the day after overdosing. There's no way. Nobody does that. A dance party. Dance party. Where's the voicemail where someone was complaining that I did not perform by effeminate man with a cold? Because I did have a cold yesterday, and no, I did not. Effeminate man with a cold made zero appearances. Oh, there's Prince with a giant boa.
Nice pink boa.
Mm. How long have we been on, Jay?
It's about an hour.
Okay. Yeah. Perhaps it's time to take a timeout. I'm trying to think what we'll do. Coming up. Well, as if you're going anywhere. This is not something I like about the podcast. I think people are all in. You just put it on and go. So I don't really have to worry about teasing you all the time with lame promotions or little teasers to get you back. You know what I want to do? Somebody asked about books, you know, because I always talk about books and try and give you some good reviews and point you in the right direction. Those of you who like to – people still like to read books. A few people do.
You like to read four at once.
I do. You're right.
I mean, at the same time, not
– I know. No, you're right. I'm really ridiculous, and I can do it. For some reason, I get bored with one. I go to book two. I get bored with book two. I go to book three. Bored with book three, go back to book one, and eventually I seem to read most of all the books.
I think it's just cool watching you do it. It's just it's magical. I've never seen anything like it, man.
And how you can like just pick up right where you left off. You're like, I haven't picked this book up in a month, and I've still
it's a strange thing, no doubt. But magical. Wow, that's very Michael Jackson.
It is. I mean,
it's magical. It's
freakish.
I don't know what it is, cool. But David Spade has an exceptional story about Eddie Murphy. And how pissed Eddie Murphy was when he pulled this little joke on Hollywood Minute. And this anger lasted 40 years. I mean, he literally was a shit at the Saturday Night Live 40-year thing because he's still pissed about what the little joke Spade made. I mean, how stupid is that?
Eddie Murphy didn't show up, right?
He was there. No, he was there. But he took the stage and people were expecting him to do a rap or something. And he just said, yeah, you know, it's good to be here. The show is great. And, you know, I guess that's about it. And he did nothing. Did you see it, Jay?
No.
He was an absolute zero.
Yeah.
John Cryer's got a book out from John Cryer from Two and a Half Men. And this is not a bad book. But I got to tell you, it really starts rocking when he gets to Charlie Sheen. Oh, my God. Because Charlie was, of course, his buddy from Two and a Half Men. They worked together for, I don't know, 8-10 years. And, oh, does Cryer have the Sheen stories? And then finally, I don't know if I'll have time for this, but the title.
Outstanding.
Mayor Rob Ford, Uncontrollable. How I Tried to Help the World's Most Notorious Mayor. It's by Mark Toohey, who was his chief of staff. And, oh, my God. I could not. I mean, we all knew he was supposedly smoking crack. There was a video. Finally turned out, yes, there was a video of this guy smoking crack, the mayor of Toronto. And there's so much more. So stand
they,
by.
They underestimated that he was way worse than.
Oh, much worse. Yeah. He was addicted to two or three things and was going to work maybe, you know, 4 or 5 hours a week. That's about all he was doing. He was a mess. His staff, basically, their job was to cover for him and just kind of keep him hidden from view. And a lot of embarrassing crap. So how about a tune to break us up here? Should we go back to the Prince theme?
We'll throw some Prince.
How about I Would Never Take the Place of Your Man? Do we have that?
We'll have that queued up. We'll play through break.
All right, Prince's I Would Never Take the Place of Your Man. This is a great song. I turned Clark onto it. He loves it. It was a hit for him. Not his biggest hit, but pretty sharp. Drum Mike Podcast! Ah! We're back on the Drew and Mike podcast. Jay and Don filling in for Mr. Clark. Not one person can do it, but two will try. The Today Show this morning had, I thought, a phenomenal little sequence here, which I'll lay on you, a little montage.
The race is not over, and Donald Trump is not going to be the nominee of this party.
I will support the Republican nominee. I don't think that's going to be Donald Trump.
I believe that Donald Trump will not be the nominee.
He's not going to be the nominee. He's not a serious candidate. He's an entertainer.
What I am firmly convinced of is that Donald Trump will not be our nominee.
Yeah, Donald Trump's not going to be the Republican nominee.
And Donald Trump is not going to be the Republican nominee.
Guess what?
He's the Republican nominee, according to the Republican Party.
Boy, they just couldn't take it. They just couldn't stand the fact that this guy waltzes in off of the streets of New York, Park Avenue, I don't know, whatever. They want to say he's a reality TV person, or as he called him, an entertainer. He's not an entertainer. He's an extremely successful business person. And I'm not a Trump kiss ass. I'm not even saying I want him to be president. I'm not sure what the hell I want now. Is anybody here openly a Donald Trump supporter?
Absolutely.
Are you really?
100%.
Nah, so. I'm kind of in between. I think it could be a disaster, but I don't think so. I think he's too smart. I would think my fear is that he so believes in himself that his overconfidence will hurt him. But I'd like to think he's smart enough to put the people around him he needs. And that's usually anybody who you have questions about. The answer is always, they'll just surround themselves with great people that know the Ronald Reagan. Did he really know that much about foreign policy? He really know that much about the economy? For whatever reason, you know, it worked. And probably would have mattered who was president.
Yeah, and I mean, way to have Trump set the stage already, because he's pissed off Mexico and all these world leaders already. So
I'm not worried about that.
And I'm not worried about it, but yeah, just, you know, nice setting the stage to become it. You know, the president, and he's got all that, you know, mud that he's already.
I want to say this about the immigration thing. There was a story yesterday about how all these people are getting their citizenship put together now because, oh my God, what if he becomes president? I'll be sent back to Mexico. Yeah. Well, is that a bad thing? That's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. When you're in this country, you're supposed to be here legally. I can't believe that this wall that Trump's talking about, why is that controversial? What is wrong with someone who wants to keep people that don't belong here, who don't have the paperwork, who aren't citizens? What's wrong with keeping them the fuck out of the U.S. until they get their shit together and fill out their paperwork and wait the proper period? A lot of people do the right thing, and they get it done. They get it done the way you're supposed to get it done. I don't know why those people aren't furious about this.
Exactly.
So what's so bad about that? I mean, they act like he's a racist because he doesn't like people being in the country illegally. I don't like it either. So anyway, here's Trump talking to the Today Show, and this is funny because this Inquirer thing about Ted Cruz's father being with Lee Harvey Oswald, and listen to Trump, he sounds so confused on this. I love that Trump reads the Inquirer, though, and doesn't ask anybody, you think I should talk about this? He just plows in. Yeah, I got it, my fault.
This morning, and Donald Trump is with us now on the phone. Mr. Trump, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Were you surprised that Ted Cruz dropped out of the race last night?
I was surprised. I did not expect it. I started hearing rumors in the afternoon, but in the end, look, he was a very tough competitor. He fought very hard, and it was a tough decision for him to make.
The ass kissing begin.
I think he did the right thing for himself and for the party, but it was a little bit of a surprise to me, yes.
Have you reached out to call him? Has he called you?
I haven't yet. He hasn't, but I would certainly expect to be talking to Ted.
Do you really think, Mr. Trump, that he can put aside all of the things you've said about him and he's said about you and support you?
I really don't know, and that goes for other people, too. I don't know, and, you know, I hope so. It would be nice in Ted's case.
A pretty major dick.
In other cases, I don't care. In Ted's case, it would be nice. We have a very good relationship.
There's no chance Trump's calling him.
In some cases, I don't care.
Surprised by it.
Right.
And it traveled along, and all of a sudden, you know, I was saying, when is this going to end? And it ended a couple of months ago, and, you know, he fought very hard.
One of the people we know you did speak to is Reince Priebus, the head of the RNC, who has now called you the presumptive nominee of the party. Can you characterize that phone call for me? Did he pledge to you that he will now put the weight of the entire party and all of the assets that it brings with it behind your candidacy?
Yes, he did, and he really, you know, he's doing a very good job. Not an easy job. We started off with 17 people, all very talented people, and, you know, he was put in a very tough position. I think it's probably about the largest group of people ever. In fact, when I first announced, just before that, there were pundits saying,
come on, get to
the
Rafael Cruz photo, please.
The history of either party to run for
Savannah gives it to him pretty good.
I almost said, what am I doing running? But the fact is that he called up last night. We had a great talk. He's behind it 100%. The victory in Indiana was amazing because it was far greater than anybody thought, and it was, you know, very conclusive. And I think that really turned a lot of heads.
Mr. Trump, this is a time that you are trying to unify the Republican Party. Yesterday morning, you went on a morning show and suggested that Ted Cruz's father, Rafael Cruz, may have somehow been involved in, of all things, the JFK assassination. I guess my question to you is, why in the world would you do that?
Well, Savannah, I was on a show, and they played a clip of Ted's father, who is very active in the campaign. It's not like he is an inactive person.
He's been a dick to me, okay?
Excuse me. He said, you know, very nasty things about me. And then I just asked about stories that were appearing all over the place, not just in the National Enquirer, about the fact that a picture was taken of him and Lee Harvey Oswald, and they didn't deny that picture. And I just asked, what was that all about? So this was just in response to some, you know, very, very nasty, I mean, honestly, very, very nasty remarks that were made about
me. But, Mr. Trump, I guess what Savannah's getting at here is, on the very morning you had this in your grasp and you were seeing the polls indicating that you were going to win this and perhaps go on to become the nominee, why take that opportunity at that moment to go back into the gutter?
Well, because I didn't know I had it in the grasp. I mean, I didn't know I was going to win by such a big margin. I won by a massive margin, and the people of Indiana, I'm so thankful to them. But I had no idea early in the morning that was the voting was just starting. The voting booths were practically not even opened when I made this call. It was a call to a show, and they ran a clip of some terrible remarks made by the father about me. And all I did is refer him to these articles
that
appeared about his picture. And, not such a bad thing.
Just in closing here, in just 10 seconds, are you fully confident, Mr. Trump, that you can unite the Republican Party behind you?
Really? I'm confident that I can
unite
much of it. Some of it I don't want. I mean, there were things made about me that those people can go away.
You know, how can you not kind of love this guy? You have to appreciate him. It's the lack of political correctness within Trump that I think is his, about 90% of his appeal is that. 10% is his business success. Obviously, you have to respect that. You should respect that. I think most people do. But the fact that this guy won't change, and we talked about this not on the podcast, but the fact that they hired some people who were going to work with him and trying to smooth out the rough edges, and after a couple of days, he just said, no, get out of here. I'm going to be myself.
I'm Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I've been doing this the whole time. It's worked for me. I'm not going to stop now. And I think he might be wrong about that, but I understand where he's coming from, because every time he fucks up,
It helps
his people. They don't mind. They just go, whatever. It's Trump.
Have you ever seen anything like
it? No, I've never seen anything like it. No,
every train wreck turns out to be good.
Yeah, it seems like it's almost helped him, but more than anything, it hasn't hurt him. And it really is because he speaks his mind. There's nothing. There's no surprise. There's no mystery. Trump, what you see is what you get. And he's going to say some stupid things. If he sees something in the Enquirer, if he sees that his opponent is hanging out with Oswald, he's going to bring it up. And, you know, what it must have been the interview you did with Good Morning America, because he was defending the National Enquirer at one point. Like, how do you bring this thing up in the National Enquirer? Said, well, the National Enquirer, remember, they broke a lot of news during the OJ trial and during the Edwards child, you know, that whole thing, which they did. They completely killed Edwards. Whatever happened to him, by the way? Where is Edwards? With a new piece of ass somewhere.
So for the Donald, it's the New York Times, Washington Post, and the tabloids. They're all the same.
Well, you know, the
according to Donald,
Enquirer had the story about Cruz and the five chicks, too, which was really interesting. That story just blew over. Why was there was no time really given to that story? And I was really wondering, did he nail one of those chicks? I mean, was there really any examination of that? It's funny how that sort of went away, because the Enquirer is not a bad source at all. But
what, do they hit one out of three?
No, I think they're better than that.
Really?
I think they're much better than that. especially when it comes to something like this. I don't know about this Cruz's father and Oswald thing. That doesn't seem to be, well, the picture is really, you just can't tell who the hell it is. But anyway, hey, I was talking about books, and I've been reading a lot of them, and have been off for a long time, so.
Speed reader.
Bear with me. There are a few things that that might seem kind of dated because they were around before Christmas. So many, God, a lot of books came out this year over Christmas. And there's more and more rock bios coming out. In fact, Carmen, mispronounced his last name, Carmen Appice from Vanilla Fudge, who was the drummer. Yep. He's a pretty famous guy. He played with a lot of people. Appice. Anyway, he's got a bio coming. It sounds like it's going to be killer because he was with Zeppelin in that hotel in Washington where you fish out the window. And they caught the mud shark. And that chick apparently nailed that mud shark.
She did.
Well, by all accounts, I mean, Bonham was there, and Bonham talked about it. And I think Robert Plant has referenced it. And it was the Vanilla Fudge guy's room, though. And Zeppelin, I guess, were hanging out with those guys.
Did you see the picture?
Of the shark?
Of the room?
The window? Beatles in it. That was from 64. And the Beatles were fishing out the window.
They caught the shark.
The shark that was used for the chick?
Yes.
Wow, and they kept it for 4 years?
What? No.
The Beatles were there in 64. The chick got nailed by the mud shark in 69, so 69. Anyway, so Carmen, this bio's got to be good. I mean, he was, that 67 to 72 period is such a, I mean, what a great period in rock and roll that is in the stories and sounds like he's got a hell of a bio coming out. And other ones recently, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Tom Petty had a good book around Christmas. Chrissy Hynde's got a pretty nice book. I wish she had more Pretenders. I think she's got a part two coming. There's a great George Harrison book that came out. Paul McCartney, Philip Norman, who wrote a pretty nasty book about John Lennon quite a while ago. But in terms of McCartney, it wasn't very kind to McCartney either. It suggested he was a very lesser part of the Beatles than was believed. Well, Philip Norman has changed his tune over the years and has gotten to know McCartney and now is going to come out with a lot of things that I don't know how big a surprise will be to Beatles fans, but among them that McCartney is really the most avant-garde member of the Beatles, not John Lennon. Because John Lennon, because he married Yoko, because he supported her stupid screaming music, which I don't even care if it's avant-garde. I don't care what it is. It sucked. It was terrible. And the fact that he supported it makes him no more avant-garde than anyone. And I love John Lennon, but McCartney had really more experimental ideas production-wise. He was more into production. And, you know, even some when they were using tape loops on Tomorrow Never Knows, which was very unique and
innovator for sure.
Huge. Yeah. That was Paul's idea. It was John's song, but it was Paul's idea. And a lot of the Beatle production, the way Sergeant or Strawberry Fields is produced, and the way it's got the hook up front, it opens up with "Let me take you down" because we're going to. I mean, the hook up front of the verse, chorus, verse. That was McCartney's idea to set it up that way. They have a couple other songs like that too, but generally speaking, in terms of ideas, he was really more the out there. Well, Magical Mystery Tour, probably the biggest mistake the Beatles made, the Magical Mystery Tour movie was Paul's idea also, and it was probably just not something very well thought out. They just lost their manager, and they were kind of askew. But anyway, that looks like it's going to be a very interesting book, and if I had the stack, I'd rattle off a whole lot more and which ones I like best. But John Cryer, not the book I would recommend first in the stack, but he's had an interesting career. I'll probably never forgive him for Ducky in Pretty in Pink. That stupid character and that stupid dance he did to Otis Redding. But whatever, people like Ducky. You know, they originally shot that so Ducky got Molly Ringwald at the end, and the test audiences hated it so much. They're like, no, not Ducky. She'd never fuck Ducky. Are you kidding me? So they had to let Andrew McCarthy, they shot another ending where Andrew McCarthy ended up with Molly Ringwald, and people were much happier. And John wasn't too happy about that, but hey, it got his career off the ground. Anyway, he goes on to work with Charlie Sheen on Two and a Half Men, and that was the part of the book that I thought was the best part because he reveals a lot of funny things about Charlie, like being on the set and Charlie talking about some girl he's dating now. And he's like, oh, really? You know, what's she like? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, here's a picture of her. And Charlie shows John a picture of her pussy. It's a picture of her vagina, a live picture. And, you know, John was kind of wondering, was she awake for this picture? Or did you shoot this when she was lying there sleeping? What's the deal, man? And I don't think Sheen really ever came clean one way or the other. But one of the other things I really loved about Charlie in terms of John Cryer and what he put 2.5 Men through. Remember, there was all that time he spent trashing Chuck Lorre, the producer of the show.
Destroyed him.
And even called John a troll at one point. I mean, he just blasted everyone and completely threw the show. I mean, the show almost died because of it. As it turns out, they got Ashton Kutcher, and they had two good seasons with Ashton. In fact, the ratings were very good.
He was probably the only one that could even come close to that role.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought anyone could have done it. I wouldn't have thought that would have even worked, but it did.
It worked.
Yeah, it was okay. So anyway, after all this went down and the whole thing of winning and all that crazy Tiger blood and all that Charlie Sheen crap, and I don't know what was going on there. I still don't understand
what
made him behave that way. And now he seems very different. I've seen him, you know, when he contracted AIDS or he revealed that he had AIDS virus.
That's humbling.
He was... true. He was stumbling and stammering. It was not that cocky, arrogant Charlie Sheen at all. Although now he is allegedly, he no longer has the virus. He's taking his great medical cocktails. AIDS is one thing. If you have money, clearly you can beat AIDS, or you can do a lot better against it than if you have no resources. But moving on. So anyway, these guys spent a lot of time talking on the set of 2.5 Men, and... John has been dating this girl for a while, I think about 6 months. And let's see, he's talking about something. And says a few weeks later, sitting around the set with a grin on my face and a sense that life was coming back to an even keel when Charlie strolled over. What's going on? What's with the smile? Oh, things are going great with Stephanie, I said. Hey, listen, we got to talk. Charlie took me aside, pulled me to a place with some privacy and said, I've been talking to my therapist because I don't know if I should say anything. I've been agonizing about this dude, really. I don't know how to say this, but Stephanie and I used to date.
Oh, no.
Oh, I said, my grin suddenly replaced by something pursed and worried. I'm sorry. I guess she hasn't told you that we dated. Well, how long did you date, Charlie? I don't know, a month, maybe a month and a half. Long enough, of course, to get into some incredibly kinky, wild, crazy shit that she'll never do with John Cryer. long enough to do unimaginable things. So it wasn't a single date or even two or three. It was, yeah. Well, was it serious, Charlie? No, not really. I could tell he was really trying to play this down for my benefit. Okay, but she was into, I don't know, you know, drugs and stuff? John does not.
Oh, he's like, straight.
Yeah, he's pretty straight. He drinks. That's about it. No, not really. I mean, you know, if I had some, she would, you know, but she wasn't really into it, I'd say.
Oh, no.
I tried to gather my train of thought with this new information. Well, I'm annoyed that you didn't tell me this, but if I may ask, how did you two break up? Charlie said, well, I wanted to bring another girl into the bed with us, and she wasn't too happy about that. And then he looked me straight in the eye, and with no trace of irony, said, so heads up on that. What a great piece of advice from Mr. Charlie Sheen. So, you know, your girl isn't into three-way, so, you know, there's a little piece of advice for you, Johnny. Thanks, Charlie. I'll keep that in mind.
Charlie.
I went home that night and I broke up with Stephanie.
Damn it, Sheen.
She tried to explain that this aspect of her past was something she didn't want to freak me out with. And then as the weeks went on, she realized it was going to be a bigger and bigger deal and that she and Charlie were never serious and wasn't something to get upset about, yada, yada. But, and I could totally understand that. She doesn't tell him up front. A little time goes by, she really does like him, you know, so, well, I got to tell him pretty soon. Then a little more time goes on, she hasn't told him, it just becomes this bigger, bigger thing hanging over her. And then she thought, well, I might as well go the distance, I might as well go for the roses and just hope he never finds out. But no, it was not to be.
Why, Sheen?
Yeah, why did Charlie have to do that? It was something she should have said right away when we met. I couldn't go forward after that. I could not. I thought about it. I really, really did, but I could not go forward. I couldn't deal with it. I think that happens a lot with guys when they find out someone they're interested in or someone they're dating, and they find out that they, you know, they did it with somebody they don't like, or they dated someone they didn't like.
John's a nice guy. He probably wanted to marry her, and then I went home and broke up with her because Charlie.
Yeah, I don't think he was really totally. He did like this girl. I mean, he was serious about her, but I don't think it was can't live without her kind of thing. And the Sheen thing was just too much. But
Sheen wasn't lacking the ladies. Why would he do that? Think about it.
He felt guilty that Cryer didn't know. She was showing up on the set, too. And so it was a little weird between her and Charlie. You know, is he supposed to act like he knows her? He's supposed to act like he's just meeting her. Anyway.
Charlie's the man.
I texted this story to Clark, and he was laughing, of course. And he texted me back, and he said, that reminds me of that guy you knew in college. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. This guy went away for the weekend. He was an engineer. He's a good guy. No offense, Jay. I don't think you can engineer this podcast, though, knowing this guy. Anyway, he was more or less not engaged, but close to engaged to this girl. He'd been with her for quite a while. He wasn't a super stud by any means, although he was an engineer. So he was headed for some good money. I mean, that was...
He wasn't a freak.
He was a partier, though. He was a big partier. But at Virginia Tech, if you were an engineer, that really gave you a leg up with women because they knew you were going to make some money. I mean, it's really a strong engineering school. And that was the best starting pay was always out of that major. So I always thought those guys had a big leg up. Anyway, the chick he was dating was, she was cool. She was fun. She partied a lot. She's a little fat, a little heavy, but she had some nice things.
You didn't, Drew.
No, I didn't do anything.
Drew.
Anyway, Bob went away for the weekend for an interview. And I think he had a Friday interview, and he's going to just stay there over the weekend because it was near his family. And while he was gone, one of my teammates on the baseball team at just a rip-roaring baseball party just got hammered and ended up with Bob's girl. And it was one of these things. Too many people knew. It wasn't like it was in front of a lot of people, but there were enough people that saw the flirting going on as the night got really late. And I think she got a ride home with him, and it was suspicious enough, and a couple people found out. And then he started telling people, and boom, Bob gets back, and she just fessed up. She knew he was going to find out. She fessed up. And he decided that he loved her enough that he was going to try and get over it. And he was a really cool guy. But unfortunately, Mike, as time went on, bragged to a few people that that he put it in her ass.
It gets no
and
worse.
It got back to Bob. That's a bummer.
He's still seeing a therapist.
Oh, I'm sure. If he isn't, he should. And that got back to Bob, and Bob dumped her. He did. He dumped her. It was like not even a moment's hesitation. That was it. It was something that I don't think they had ever done.
So this was your close buddy?
No, he wasn't a close buddy. He was a friend, but I mean, they were both friends of mine, but no, I was not terribly connected to either one of them. Okay. And I remember at the time, you know, this was 1981 or something, and I didn't really get the anal sex thing.
I still don't.
Why would you do that? I just thought it was, you still don't get it?
But
I'm not sure I get it now. I'm not sure I get it now either, to be honest.
Would you rather your buddy fuck her or put it in her ass?
Well, I think it's fairly obvious. It's just another line. It's just another line is crossed, and
it's the biggest.
Yeah, there's something just wild about it, and it blew Bob's mind, and that was that.
I was wondering if it was in the ass, just because you said he was totally smashed. So it was just
I think that had something to do with it.
Yeah, he was a freak. He was a jock.
He was a freak. Yeah, and he would get away with anything he could get away with, and
that she was. Sick of missionary because the engineers are smart and conservative, and Drew's best friend was crazy and wild. And
he was a little wild, man.
Whatever.
So, moving along to David Spade, and the book is called David Spade is Almost Interesting, the memoir. And this is a pretty good book, actually. It's an easy read. Spade is funny from start to finish. He's got some great stories. Of course, there's that story about his assistant. Did you hear that story? His assistant tried to kill him. His assistant tried to kidnap him. He was lying in bed. I think, I can't even remember the story very well, but I think he shot a taser at him while he was in bed. Yeah, it was crazy. But somehow Spade got away. And then he tells another story about his maid stealing money from him, which is pretty funny because it made it clear that David was making a lot of money at one point, and he kept large sums of cash in the house, like $10,000-$20,000. And some maid was helping herself for like $5,000 a time when she come clean the house. She just take $5,000 out of the pile.
So he was partying.
Oh yeah. He was doing something that required a lot of cash.
And he didn't realize it.
Yeah, and he didn't notice. No, you're right. And I'm trying to remember if it was a video camera, if he started, if there was surveillance in the house. I'll look into it after I tell this story, because this one is the Eddie Murphy story, and it is, I thought it was a great story. I never knew this was so, so intense. I'm sitting in my dumpy office. I realized Eddie Murphy put out 2 back-to-back flops. I wonder how many flops he has now. God, he's got a lot of bad movies.
They're all flops now.
By the way, there couldn't be a harsher word to hit your ear when you're an actor than flop. It's brutal, short, harsh, and to the point. The past tense is even worse. I heard your movie fucking flopped. So awful, and I should know. I've heard it a lot. That and bombed. I think the 2 films were Harlem Nights and Vampire in Brooklyn, so I casually wrote a joke about Eddie Murphy for my piece that week, his Hollywood Minute. You know the line, look, kids, a falling star. Quick, make a wish. And Eddie's picture's falling down the screen. Remember that, anybody?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The burn skims by on air, gets sort of a laugh mixed with an, ooh, no, you didn't response, and I think nothing of it. Especially because it's buried in the middle of 10 or 12 of those rapid-fire sizzles that come and go quickly. So on the following Monday around 5 p.m., I'm sitting in the writer's room reading the paper, waiting for the meeting with that week's host when an NBC page came into the room. He looked at me a little oddly and said, Eddie Murphy's on the phone for you. My heart stopped. What? Seriously? Yeah, line 2. I'm not here. Take a message. She walked away. I could tell she was a bit starstruck by him, not me, and curious as to why Eddie was calling me. Also curious as to why I wasn't sprinting to the phone. Meanwhile, I was quietly shitting diarrhea to my Dockers out the window and down 6th Avenue, thinking, holy shit, why is this famous motherfucker calling me? My spider senses are tingling. He has to be pissed. What do I say? I just did that joke about him. That has to be it. In other words, I was freaking the fuck out. I didn't know if I should call him back or act like I didn't know he'd called or hide under Lauren's desk till this crazy storm blew over. I was starting to have an actual official panic attack when ring, ring, the phone 7 feet from me in the writer's room started ringing. One of the assistants picked it up. Writer's room, hang on. David, it's Eddie Murphy. The phone's getting closer and closer. I mean, would that freak you out or what? I was actually nervous reading this. Can't find me, I said casually, staring a hole through People magazine, pretending to read it, frozen in total unmitigated fear. But now, by now, my heartbreaker had picked up the pace a bit. She hung up. I broke out of my trance and realized I needed to enlist Chris Rock. He covers all bases. He's my black friend. So any black-related problems go across his desk. He gets carbon copied and everything. And he's Eddie's buddy, too. So he knows what I'm dealing with. He will have special insight, like when a movie brings in a real forensic criminologist to be a consultant. Rock knows what makes this guy tick. He could solve this. But before I could even get up to find Rock, I had a new problem. Ring, ring. He's calling again. What the fuck? Eddie Murphy again, the page said. I'm in a meeting, I lied. He said he knows you're not in a meeting because it's 5:45 and the Monday host meeting's at 6 and it's never on time. He says call him back right now or he's driving in from Brooklyn to talk to you in person. Oh, oh my God. Oh. Oh, that sucks. I'm staring at this page in disbelief. Why on God's green earth was this superstar blowing me up 3 times in a row? Chris Rock then walked in and said, you better call him. You don't want him coming down here. Don't forget, he's still a black guy.
way to help him out the situation.
No shit. I don't want this guy coming to have a talk with me. Even if he's famous, he scares me. I have no choice. So I take his number, ask Chris to get on the other phone to listen and protect me. I dialed. My heart's pounding. I didn't want to do this, especially since I had 0 game plan. Hello? A woman's voice answered. My heart leapt. Perhaps I dialed the wrong number. Is Eddie there? It's David Spade. I'm sure my voice crackled like Peter Brady in that Brady Bunch episode where he goes through pubic puberty. Hang on, she said, then muffled, it's him. Stomach in knots, I heard, hello. Hey, Eddie, it's Spade. Dramatic pause. If this is a Lifetime movie, we'd definitely fade to commercial at this point. Now, here comes Eddie. David Spade, who the fuck do you think you are? Honestly, who the fuck? Going after me? You dumb motherfucker, I'm off limits. Don't you know that? You wouldn't have a job if it weren't for me. Talking shit about me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On and on, making me feel like shit. I barely spoke. I just stared at Rock in disbelief. It was so much worse than I had imagined. I wanted to apologize, explain the joke, anything, but nothing came out. Here was one of my favorite comedians of all time ripping me a new ass. I'd worshipped this dude for years, knew every line of his stand-up. And now he hated me, like really hated me. The opposite of Sally Field. It was horrible. I didn't hate him. Of course not. He just got caught in friendly fire. And my deep desire to make an impression on my bosses and keep my job. How pathetic. I took my beating and he hung up. Rock felt bad for me. He was caught in the middle. Old friend of Eddie's, new friend of mine. I said, Rock, Eddie makes fun of Mr. T getting AIDS and a million other people in his HBO special. Made fun of everybody. I mean, how could Eddie Murphy, I don't get this, a comedian. I know he was special. And he brought Saturday Night Live back from the depths of depravity. But it's really pretty pathetic. It was a great joke. It was funny. It was hard-hitting, certainly. But he had a couple lame movies. And I just can't, it just really blows my mind when a comedian of all people can't take a joke. Reminds me of something that happened on our show a couple years ago. Was it Rob Schneider?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who can forget that one at all? Jesus.
Oh, you are so fired. You are so fired! Oh, what a jackass.
Well, then you got all the celebrity roast, you know, comedian roast and celebrity roast, and you know,
exactly.
They're like all astonished, you know, why are you picking on me, Carrot Top and all them?
So anyway, let's see, he goes on to say, the joke was barely a flesh wound, it won't hurt him. I'm nobody. Rock tried to make me feel better, but there was nothing he could do. He split back to his office. I kept thinking, this isn't fair. But the truth is, when you're famous, you never want someone on a supposedly cool show to say you're not cool, even if a person saying it is a nobody like me. Fame is so fragile and fleeting. And that's true, although I think Eddie Murphy had enough in his background. His IMDb was pretty damn impressive. I think he could survive this joke. Jab like the one I directed, Eddie, can be the thing that starts to turn public opinion. There is something, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, but certain people, they reach an age and, you know, like Larry King, we were talking about Larry King off the air, and the fact that he used to be this very respected radio guy, and at some point, he became pretty much of a national joke. And Eddie is so far from that. I mean, this is, I don't know, what, mid-90s? Come on. So after that incident, Spade says, I had some close encounters with Mr. Murphy. When was the opening? Mr. Murphy. When was it the opening of the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas when a bunch of celebs got invited to see a private Rolling Stones concert? I brought one of my high school buddies, and it was a star-studded event. Brad Pitt to my right, Depp and DiCaprio at noon and 6. Wow. There could have been more celebs there, and we were packed in like sardines. I was having the time of my life when, for some reason, I glanced back to the row behind me. I think it was just to let people know I knew all the words to give me shelter. When who do I see down the road but Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock? Oh, fuck. My kryptonite's in the house. Suddenly feeling weak. I didn't want to get beat up in front of the Stones. So I snuck another glance and saw Rock mouth to me, I can't talk to you. I'm with Eddie. That Rock is such a chicken shit. I'm kidding. I was never mad at Rock because he was always half kidding, but I was freaking out enough that Brad noticed Brad Pitt. He asked, what's going on? So I filled him in with a short version. I'll protect you, he said, like I'm a chick. So I laughed quietly and hoped he was serious. Whenever I'd see Rock after that for years, he'd say, saw Eddie last week, he still hates you. It sort of impressed me that it still bugged him. I mean, that's pretty amazing, really, that something that's a little stupid joke would bother Eddie Murphy for that long, for that many years. I was told he said he was mad at everyone about this, not just me. He was mad that Lorne would let that joke to air. He was mad that the show turned on him. The show turned on him. And that's why he never hosted after that or did the reunion shows. He says he's over this now. Oh, my. How wonderful. Yeah. Eddie Murphy. Pathetic. A joke. A little stupid joke. But great story from David Spade. That, when he's talking about that phone ringing, I got to tell you, the first time I read it, I just had the most horrible feeling inside. And I remember when Rob Schneider was calling our building. If you're not familiar with the story, we were supposed to talk to Rob Schneider, the copy machine guy. What's his name? Super Gigolo? Ace Bigelow? Male Gigolo? Wait, what's it?
Deuce Bigelow.
Yeah. I'm trying to act like I don't know the name of anything he does. It makes him seem smaller, but actually he's done okay for himself for some reason. Anyway, we were supposed to talk to him, and we didn't have the right phone number, and we somehow, because we talked to him at his mother's house before, we got his mother on the phone, and she was really sweet. I mean, she sounded like a mom. She was totally cool. At the end of the conversation, she happened to mention that Rob comes and stays here sometimes, and I think she said something about staying in the basement. And so that led to a flurry of joke about the stack of magazines and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, fill in the blank. Take your cheesy basement, older guy living in a basement joke, fill in the blank, and we said it. And somebody put that, I don't know why that thing ended up on YouTube, but it did, and he heard it. And claimed that his mother was so upset that she was hospitalized, that she had a weak heart in our phone conversation. Put her over the edge. And I don't even believe that. I don't think that's true. Not in a million years. So he's calling our office like every 10 minutes and screaming at receptionists. And then he called the home office in Boston so he could talk to our big bosses. That's nice. Thanks a lot, Rob. And when we finally called him back, he said, "You are so fired." I mean, he was so mad. He said he talked to Adam Sandler about it, and Adam Sandler agreed with him. It was appalling. So I guess Adam Sandler hates us, too. I'm sure I'd love to hear that conversation. I bet Sandler was just wanting to get off the phone. Yeah, that's terrible, man. Okay, talk to you later. Might have a little cameo for you in my next movie. See ya. Somehow we ended up, somebody in management eventually talked to him and said that they wanted to send flowers to his mother.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, yeah, sent flowers and everything was hunky-dory. But we did find out, because his behavior was so strange and off the wall, I mean, it was, I'm not exaggerating, we didn't do anything terrible, and not even close to terrible. And nothing, it was, his mother was laughing, by the way. She had a good time on the call. Everything was cool. She had a ball talking to us, as Mike Clark used to say. She had so much fun talking to us. But we knew something was wrong with this guy and did a little homework, and it turns out he goes wacko at bad reviews and has challenged movie reviewers. And I think he even took out a billboard against somebody once. Yeah, and got sort of mixed up in their personal life or did somehow learned that this guy had problems with an ex-wife or something and tried to make, you know, just really crazy, crazy stuff. And Spade beats up on him in the book. Spade makes him out to be a big asshole in the book. He talks about how he and Rob Schneider worked on something, and it was a skit when he just started, and he's desperately trying to get stuff on Saturday Night Live, and we all know how hard that sounds. And he went home to get some sleep. Well, for some reason, Rob Schneider stayed up all night and stayed at the in the writing room. And so when people got there in the morning, he's like, "Hey, I got this thing I want to turn in. I think it's really funny." Or, "I think it's really funny." He didn't put David Spade's name on it and said he forgot. So they all thought it was just his. And I think he got all the credit for it, too. And Spade was furious and didn't believe him. And then other people end up telling him that he'd done the same thing to other people. And he goes on. I mean, he's like the only guy he rags on in the book. I never get the impression that he has any positive feeling towards him. But anyway, the book is David Spade. David Spade is almost interesting, the memoir by David Spade.
Well, and you remember we were talking a little bit, too, about Eddie and the Nutty Professor, the fart scene.
Yeah.
And how crazy that was. We got that here if you want any of that.
I think I do remember hearing something on TV about colon cleansing. They say everyone...
So you remember when Eddie was funny?
I'm getting me an appointment and go down and get my colon cleansed thoroughly.
You want your colon cleansed? Fine, I'm going to clean mine.
Yeah, now my colon is clean. I'm talking squeaky clean. What happened, Neil? You're going to start breaking gas. Don't break gas and destroy
me. Don't tell me to stop. You're the one that brought up colon cleansing and all that mess.
I did not say anything about breaking gas. I said that I was going to get my colon clean.
No, you can talk about putting a tube in somebody's ass, but I can't break wind.
I didn't say nothing about putting no holes up nobody's ass.
I
said...
What do you think of colon again? You think you run the asshole by the car wash?
He's choking the baby.
As long as I'm back there, I can do what I want to do. Case in point.
Who that called my name?
Yeah, I called you up. Your name is.
You heard of me. I talked this between the crack of your ass.
Yeah, you know I can go all night.
Oh, baby, too.
See what you made me do? God damn it, I messed up my pants.
Damn, Dad.
You gotta clean them yourself, you rotten.
Nutty Professor at his one fine, fine movie. That scene on the stage when he takes out that other comedian. Mm-hmm. Who was that? Was that Chappelle?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think so. I don't know for sure. I can't remember.
I can't remember either. I wish I hadn't asked because now I'm dying to know. Absolutely. With the crazy teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that is a great scene.
I don't know if you wanted to check out, too. You remember the email on the way out? We got that email about Wolf Blitzer.
Wolf Blitzer, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Wolf Blitzer on Jeopardy. We played the clip of Wolf yesterday on the coverage of Prince's death. And, you know, he calls in, of all people, Larry King, and they're discussing it. And then Wolf decides to make a real statement and points out that we all remember Purple Haze and the effect that had on people. You know, talking about Prince, trying to credit Prince, and he brings up a Hendrix song. I mean, obviously, he had no idea who Prince was. So somebody sent us, you know, speaking of Clueless, Wolf Blitzer on Jeopardy, where you would think this guy is on CNN, you think he'd dominate Jeopardy.
Apparently not.
But Jeopardy, Celebrity Jeopardy will surprise you, man.
Now we come to Wolf Blitzer, the Situation Room. I'm sure you can answer a question that I have for you. The name of this pasta, similar to penne, means little mustaches. Doesn't sound so tasty now. Wolf.
What is fettuccine?
No. If you can read, you can cook. She wrote in the introduction to her classic, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. Wolf.
Who is Julia Childs?
That's right. We have a score change to announce, and that affects you, Wolf. I'm informed that you put an S on Julia Child's name. It's Julia Child, and so we have to deduct the 800.
It's already down
so
to 1,000.
King David and Jesus both hailed from this town. Wolf.
What is Jerusalem?
No.
Ooh.
An accused person in court, along with his counsel. Wolf.
What is a defendant?
No. Selected some material from a larger work. Wolf.
Annotated?
No. The 1850s saw a bad one of this five-letter word that refers to an economic crash and the fear-driven rush to sell.
Panic?
Wolf.
What is a crash?
Nope. Wolf, things have not worked out as well as you had hoped for, I'm sure. Andy's so much faster on that signaling device today. But it's long been our policy on Celebrity Jeopardy that all contestants get to play in the final round.
Even the
round.
Pathetic
so
ones
even though
with
you're
negatives.
At minus 4,600 now, we're going to wipe that out.
Minus 4,600? I've never seen that.
So you get to play in Final Jeopardy.
Jesus,
as
Wolf.
Well.
He's the biggest idiot ever to turn up on Jeopardy.
In a way, though, I Alex was kind of wrong there, too, because he first said he accepted Julia Childs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. And then they had to correct Alex as well, like, you know, with the S. So.
Well, yes, even Alex has to be corrected once in a while. He's such a snob.
Yeah.
I mean, he really comes off as one. Anyway, there you go. And we're going to wrap things up. My thanks to Don and Jay for helping out here. There's be a lot of shows where I have to kind of carry this thing myself, and we'll figure all that out. I got some good news today about some people who could really help on a day like this when Charlie and Clark can't be here. But Mike Clark will be back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, for show number two. And let's continue to remind Clark that he's only doing two shows a week and that maybe he could do a third. I don't know. I don't want to push him yet. I thought he was so good yesterday. It was really, I mean, it was fantastic. I thought it was just fabulous.
Yeah, and I think it was great.
It was a great show when he came back from vacation, but this is a long vacation. And just the fact that he was on his game, and I saw he had a lot of notes, and he was actually, he cared.
He didn't get one bad, with all the email and all the Facebook posts, there wasn't one negative thing that he said.
The crying car was empty at the show yesterday. So, yeah, Mike will be back tomorrow, and then Charlie LaDuff will do his debut podcast on Friday. Looking forward to that. Charlie sent me a text today. I think he's a little uptight. Like, what are we doing? We got to talk. What's going on? Call me. Doesn't like texting. Send us a mail to mail@drewandmikepodcast.com. And, of course, our website is drewandmikepodcast.com. Not drewandmike.com, as I informed some people who said, I can't get on. I'm so sorry, Matt. And a couple others. That'll do it. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great one, everybody. See you.